I am your future.
Isn't it about time for a change?
We're our national leaders.
AmericanWorkersRadio.com.
You're listening to American Workers Radio, a national network promoting American-made products with your host, Michael Blihash.
Well, welcome once again to another edition of American Workers Radio here on 860 AM. As you know, we serve the Philadelphia and the entire tri-state area, and you can listen in on the internet simply by going to AmericanWorkersRadio.com and click on the Listen Live link. I also want to remind all of you that you can also hear the rebroadcast 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, by going to the same site, AmericanWorkersRadio.com, and click on the Listen to Rebroadcast link. If you received that email this morning that we send out to thousands of our listeners, share that with someone, email it to them, make sure that we can get as many people in our family as possible. Well, we certainly have been in a lot of craziness going on with all the elections and people now beginning to talk about things. Wow. Today with me, I have Mark Andel, the very, very well-known founder of the Made in America store. And I know that he's doing his countdown to the big opening of his brand new store, which is going to be taking place on Saturday, May the 21st. They're at 1000 West Maple Court in Elma, New York. And I know that Larkin Connolly was visiting him here with him in the last few days. So we'll get Mark to tell us a little bit about that. And also with us is Rich Logis, the very well-known principal of RJL Technology Integration. Our engineer is Henry Chaplinsky, and I'm Michael Blihash, and I thank you for spreading the word. I'm going to talk about many of the things that people have discussed with me in the travels I've been making in the last few days, and it's really getting very interesting. But first, I'm going to turn to Mark and ask him, what's the latest, guy, with your new adventure down there?
How you doing, guys and listeners? Michael, yeah, I was had a great week, and Larkin paid me a visit. Had some great conversation with Larkin and his friend Bill Ritter regarding SCORE and what we're doing. My father joined us, and I think Larkin will fill in the blanks there. I think he has so many chapters, my father, of stories that I think Larkin was dizzy. He had to take a break to digest all the stories. But great time with Larkin on Monday. And our store, our new world-class destination, we're calling it, is about 90% done, Mike. And I invite all the listeners and you guys, May 21st, Armed Forces Day, we're going to have one heck of a party. We got five bands and a chicken barbecue, and it's a statement. 6 years as the Made in America store team with our eight outlets and 7,000 products we sell now, and it's just a thank you to everybody, even our radio show and you, Mike, Rich, Larkin, and Henry, for supporting. And the Made in America movement is, you know, stronger than ever, and I think people don't realize the difference they can make and have made already by buying Made in America products. It's the answer. So I encourage everybody to take it up a notch and go out today, tomorrow, and to really ask and start and nicely ask, but you want Made in America products because it's the one thing not sexy enough, but you know what? It works and it makes a difference. So, Mike, we got a lot going on, and we're fired up here in Buffalo.
I thank God for Mark Andel's of the world. And Rich Logis, how are you doing these days?
Oh, guys, Michael, thank you. Good morning to our listeners. And I met to Larkin and Mark, when I went to the Orlando event a year and a half ago, I met Bill Ritter at the SCORE event, and I was just, I was so impressed by all the SCORE people. You know, Michael, these are, and Larkin did not pay me for this plug, I promise. But, I mean, the people I met, you know, you talk about people really, I mean, these are selfless people, Michael. They're devoting and dedicating their time to help entrepreneurs, right, up-and-coming business owners. And, Mark, I'm going to tell you, the fact is you're helping to make Made America sexy again, right? You're bringing the American Made sexy back. And Justin Timberlake didn't pay me for that plug, just to be clear. So you're doing it, Mark. I mean, the bottom line is me and our audio engineer today had a discussion on his way in about what separates for those who win and don't. Those who tend to not win at things, they tend to just talk a lot. And those who tend to do well, they do it. They don't just talk about it, they do it. So That's where it is. So you're doing that, Mark.
And, Rich, I'd like to say one comment. You know, on score, what Larkin does and Bill Ritter, it's incredible. And my father had such a problem realizing they do it on volunteer time. And me and you, Rich, once in Florida go, oh, my God, Larkin's crazy for all he does. And I think we're all a certain crazy, and we have passion. But I think Larkin met a lot of my team players. They crawl on the floor for me. You couldn't get people that I have for millions of dollars. And Larkin witnessed this. And that's what I'm blessed with. I think he visited my wife twice that runs the one store. And great, great stuff. But, Rich, good people together can make a difference. That's why we got to all line on the same track and just keep going. And the negatives and all that, we just pass by and go make a difference. The good people doing good things.
Sharing that good example, Mark, means everything to people these days. And I understand that Larkin Connolly wants to speak up. Dr. Larkin Connolly, how are you?
I'm wonderful this morning. How are you, Michael?
Oh, we're doing our best over here. I heard you had a great visit to the good Buffalo area.
Well, I'm here in downtown Buffalo now at a place called the 31 Club for an SBA community reach-out event. I wanted to steal Bill Ritter's car and drive out to Elma so that I could sit across the desk from Mark and call in from the same place so we could make faces at each other. But that didn't work out, unfortunately. Yeah, I had an unbelievable visit. And I think in the order of their importance, first place would have to be a tie. I met Mark's beautiful wife and Mark's father, who didn't get through chapter one of the stories that he wanted to tell me. And Bill and I had breakfast this morning trying to remember all of them.
And some you don't want to remember, Larkin.
Yeah, right. There's a couple there. But listen, what an entertaining guy. And, you know, Michael, you have a triumvirate, the three musketeers here, Rich, Mark, and myself. And I've kind of closed the circle now because now I know Mark's wife. I can say one thing about the three of us and the women that we keep. All three of these women have to be blind. They are gorgeous. I was so impressed with Mark's wife. I knew it's what I was going to meet. I knew that she would possess the same spirit that he does, and she was so proud of her store yesterday. And it really, Mark, that's a great store.
That's the one we moved, Larkin, and I didn't know you went to see her, and she told me later last night, you know, Larkin and Bill stopped to see me. I said, really? Again? Did they find the store? Yeah, so what do you think? That's one of our moves, and she takes pride in her store.
It's a great store. It's a beautiful store. It's a well-kept store. We walked in. She saw us from the back of the store. She ran up. She gave us a hug. Welcome to the store. And she looked down, and there was this little piece of plastic that couldn't have been a quarter of an inch long. And she bent over and picked it up real quick and looked at me and said, you didn't see that.
That's the people I've got.
Yeah, that's meticulous. But I apologize for being late. I'm sure Mark talked about Bill Ritter and Frank Spartino. Frank is 82-year-old leader of the SBA in Western New York. And the he's an institution. He's an absolute institution. I spent more time with him this trip than I ever have, and I've really had a great time.
Now, Larkin, as you were up there in the Buffalo area, what have you seen about the job situation?
Most everybody has blue lips still.
It was cold.
What the heck? I got on the plane.
And that's a warmer week, Larkin.
Yeah, it was 72 degrees. I got off the plane and I saw all the airline workers and everybody still had blue lips. I thought, it's got to be cold here. And then I stepped off that plane. It's cold. But they're looking for a great weekend. Buffalo is, I swear I could close my eyes. You could drop me in either Pittsburgh or Buffalo, and I wouldn't know which city I'm in. They're both kind of hard backbone, labored kind of blue-collar towns. You got to love both places. They're really, really great places. But I was upstairs, and Mark, you'll even be prouder of this. I'm sure you recounted the story with Scartino, with Frank.
Yeah, I'm going to go through that real quick. I touched on you and Bill real good, but I want to tell that story and how it affected me 26 years ago too, Bill.
Yeah. Well, Frank, I'll let you tell it 26 years ago. But this year, I said to Ritter, we got to call Scartino before we see him and tell him that Mark followed my advice and went to a community bank, and it's not kind of moving as fast as it should. And Bill said, oh, that's a piece of cake. He calls Scartino, and he said, Frank, bank of, I can't even think of the name of
Lake Shore Community Bank, yeah.
Yeah, he said, that's one of those banks you drive through the town, you blink, you don't even see it. And he said, Frank told Bill on the other end of the line, don't worry about it, I'll take care of it. He calls the president of the bank, said, yeah, I got a buddy in there that's been a real inspiration to me, to the SBA, and to the Western New York community. It's really carrying a banner very high, and it's such an honorable initiative. And I think he's come to you for a large sum of money, and it is a large sum of money. And I, you know, I don't think that's one of those things we need to hold up. So why don't you give him a little bit of a push or something? I don't ask for many favors, but this is one I'm asking for. And he hung up, and the bank called Mark about an hour later and said, "Well, we've been looking at this."
Yeah.
And I think Mark, it kind of all fell in place. But I mean, that's what SCORE does. We know the SBA. We know the right people. And you want to borrow $1 million, you want to borrow $500,000, $1.5 million. If you're Mark Andel and you're that honorable, your initiative is that solid, your resolve and your enthusiasm is as high as Mark's is, there's just no reason why anything should be held up. And as a result of that, I don't think it's going to be held up.
Yeah, and Larkin, I want to say, so Mike and Rich and Henry, so Larkin comes, we visit the small Elma store where he was before, we go to distribution, he sees my new project, a little store we're building there, Larkin and somebody outside, and this Bill Ritter says, hey, what's that bank? And I give it to him, he goes, can you text me that? I said, sure, and who's the contact? And anyways, in this hour tour, and then hearing my father's stories, and Bill comes over and says, hey, you know, guy wants to talk to you. And it's Frank, the head of the SBA, and I haven't talked to Frank in 26 years ago. He helped me. He was the guy that made my General Welding exist. And Larkin, I wanted to make that clear because that should be told, and I'm proud of that because one guy made a call for me, and it was to Frank, and Frank made my General Welding. I was 100% finance, guys. Nobody does that nowadays. I asked Larkin and Bill, who does 100%? And that's guts, and it's called something else, too. And this time, who calls me? Frank, within this hour, I get this call, and I told him the bank, and there's a holdup. Because the world has changed, guys, and I want to tell even the listeners, hard to get money. 30 years in business, I've been hard to close a deal still with a good business, good background, good reputation, because the regulations in 2008 have changed so much. And even my bank CEO said, welcome to Regulations 101, Mark, because they want reviewed level station. Basically, they want to audit you, and they want to run your business for you. But anyways, this call, you know, Bill had Frank call, and Frank called my banker and said, no, I already talked to Nancy. I'm like, really, Frank? Yeah, no, I already called her. Within the hour, you called her already? Oh, yeah, I told her. You know, what's going on? Can I help? You know, and it was just awesome. Larkin, that is what, like, my father had such a problem realizing you don't get paid. And he does now. I know it's for the good of the good. These guys fly around. You know, yeah, they get a hotel room and they get a lunch. You know, but they do this for the good of the good, helping people get off the ground, helping people with their knowledge, and making that call connection and that relationship. So awesome, Mike. If you've seen it in action, this was within 2 hours he showed up. We're making a change already, and I needed it, Larkin. You know what I got going on. My bank asked me, hey, when are you starting your project, Mark? I said, we're 90% done. And I love, they fall over, and Larkin, you know what I mean, I'm 90% done, yeah. I haven't got the dollar yet. And they said, why'd you do that? I said, well, because my lease is done at my other store April 1st. Oh, that's passed already. Oh, yeah, the guy's being nice. So nobody really realizes I can't ever stop. I'm full throttle. Would you say, Larkin, we kind of go faster. All
yeah,
my people are high energy. Nobody gets a lunch, and nobody puts their feet up on a desk. That's our first question, is what you don't do to work with Mark Andel.
So in that Andel family, I can guarantee you, the apple did not fall far from the tree. You think Mark talks fast? I said to his dad, I interrupted him, and I said, you're going to have to give me a second here. I'm going to have to ramp up my listening skills about twofold right now. I don't want you to slow down. I don't want you to talk slower. I'll just listen faster.
Larkin, he's still talking about you, and he got you your lotion that he's going to send you. He called me. I got Larkin's lotion. You know, so he loves you. You're already in the family.
You know what that reminds me? We have to get him on the radio broadcast one day because that is very important to hear what he has to say. I'm sure he would like to give what his thoughts were over the last 30 or 40 years.
Oh, yeah. He's got a few. Remember, he grew up poor, Mike, and he's not afraid to tell you, right, Larkin?
You know, he's exactly what our whole broadcast is about. As you see now, these days, everybody is starting to pay attention to the American-made issue, to jobs for Americans, what are we going to do to do the economy over and all. It's a whole new world. Even some of the political ads are starting to push this over the edge. You know, we can't allow America to get hurt anymore and this and that. However, there's one thing I'm sure that all of us are seeing, that the candidates, the political candidates are still talking in generalities, but for the first time, people are saying, we don't want the generalities, we want specifics.
Yeah, and one thing, Larkin, you'd probably agree with, my father might think it's rigged a little bit. What do you think, Larkin?
Oh, yeah, I think he does. Yeah. That's 82 years of a very, very unique perspective of a guy that was second generation. Yeah, I grew up in a really, really tough environment, but made the best of what he had and raised, is it five?
It's Mark? Five kids, yeah.
Five kids. Just a great guy. And I think the next move for me is to come up here and buttonhole and kind of take off to the side your mother, who would probably give me a perspective that says, not only is Mark's dad nuts, Mark's nuts also.
And, yeah, my mom's real quiet.
They're both out of their mind. And if you know of a drug that I can give the both of them that would slow them down, I'd very much appreciate it.
Remember, my mom still cleans for me. I said, Mom, you don't got to clean the building here. She, you know, she worries like, you know, I'm blessed with a great family. Larkin, you witnessed it. It's just, I couldn't ask for better people in my life.
No, it's all my wife. Family. And I met his best friend from kindergarten.
Oh, Mark Suter, yep.
Mark Suter, and I just met a great time. I met the airline pilot.
Yeah, my God, just Rick.
Yeah, I just met a bunch of great people that look at you like, what are you talking about? This is just what we do. This is how we are every day. This is how we get things done. And everybody appreciates being involved. And I don't know, it's just an extremely, extremely unique set of circumstances.
It's that personal touch.
Yeah. And they all want to kill me, guys. Now, I said I'm going to get killed by a woman bus driver. You know, they absolutely tell me how they feel, Larkin. And you see the type. You know, they don't hide nothing or sugarcoat nothing.
Right, right.
But we
right,
get the job done, you know, period, always.
I'll tell you, the heartening one was it was visiting the Galleria store and seeing your wife's store and the pride she took in that. We just don't have that in America anymore. We don't have it. I mean, she was so personally invested in the store, you could just see it all over her.
We just moved that one, Larkin. So in 24 hours, we had to break down our other beautiful store and move her. And in 24 hours, we reset up full store and never missed a sale. You know, that's hard to do.
That's going to become my favorite store because there's Made in America and Joseph A. Bank right next to it.
You see that big flag hanging out front? That was
Yep.
20-foot by 30-foot.
It's just marvelous. Mark continues to provide us with an example of how it can be done.
Well, I'm telling you, it sounds like I was there. I'm so glad that you got a chance to let us know because I didn't get a chance to get up to Mark's store yet. But someday soon, Mark, you'll be surprised.
Hey, Mike, I'm going to take you to a similar place because I took Larkin to gain a little weight. I think we put the 3 pounds of the 10 that he lost back on.
Wow.
But it was called the Buffalo Plate. It's got a beef on a wick, a fish fry, and chicken wings. What do you think, Larkin? That was all right.
I called the waitress over and I said, are you real busy right now? Not too terribly busy. I said, pull a chair up there and help me with this. I can't eat all this. Are you hungry?
I'm a dog. I finished it, Larkin.
And it was Tony Rome's. And I thought, Tony Roma's. You got a Tony Roma's up there? Well, it's not Tony Roma. It's Tony Rome, R-O-M-E.
Right, right.
Tony Rome's.
And
it's
an old hotel from the late 1800s, actually, in East Aurora, which is a neat little town, small town America.
Really is. Western New York is a great place. I'm so impressed.
Well, that shows you how important the score connections are.
Because absolutely. We made Larkin famous, too. We put that picture on the websites going up tonight on social media. So, Larkin, get your pen ready for them signatures.
I want to make one more comment that kind of qualifies how good the SBA is in Western New York and how much of a legend Frank Sortino is. So far this year, they have lent out $72 million to small businesses in the first half of the year. They will do over $150 million this year, loans to small businesses. 114 of those loans were written to the manufacturing sector to the tune of $15.5 million.
Wow.
Now, Mark's gone off that number by a mill on his own.
I'm bank-owned and debt-driven, Larkin.
That's my
new T-shirt.
That's it.
Yeah.
Bank-owned, debt-driven.
But, you know, Mark listened, and it's advice I give all the time. You know, you're a part of a community like this, you got to go to the community banker. You can't be beholden to M&T or Wells Fargo, and I hate to use them as national banks, but they're good banks. But when you go to a community bank, that guy knows you, your wife, your kids. He's been inside your business, and he knows what's going on. And there was another story. I went to Russell's Steakhouse last night.
Oh, yeah.
Big Russell's Steakhouse. And this guy's a legend in steakhouses worldwide. And I met Russ. There's a book about him. He signed a copy of the book and gave it to me and said, read about him. A successful guy right here. And he handed it to me. But Russ was 77 years old when he sold his old restaurant and hotel and decided to retire. Went home, was retired for exactly 4 days. Came back to the old restaurant and said, do you guys need some help? And they said, no, we got it under control. They don't want to bring the old owner back. It was his son, as a matter of fact.
Right.
We're okay. We're okay, Dad. We got it covered. So he said, okay, well, I'm going to go build another one then. I'm bored. This is crazy. He built another restaurant last night, Tuesday night, jammed. People standing in the lobby waiting for tables, jammed. Absolutely jammed from head to head. And Frank and Russell could not, Big Russ could not get a loan. The banks, all of them looked at him and said, wait a minute. How you want us to lend money into the highest liability industry, restaurants and motels, to a 75-year-old guy, and we think our money's secure. So he's sitting there. It's like Mark. He had already started the job, already excavating, building the building.
But that's entrepreneurship.
That's entrepreneurship.
We go.
And he got a hold of Frank Sortino, and Frank said, well, what's the problem? And he said, nobody will lend me any money. I've been to everybody. They won't lend me any money. And he said, we can fix that. 3 days later, he had a commitment for $8 million to finish the project from a community bank. That's what the SBA can do.
So, Larkin, Frank, you see the restaurant on the other side of the freeway than his. Also, he built a beautiful veterans park.
Yep.
Right between the road and the restaurant, which nobody does. It's acres, and it's beautiful, and it's respected.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's got a memorial to World War II, a memorial to Vietnam, a memorial to 9/11.
Most cities don't even have that size one.
Right.
No, you know what I mean. It's a private
guy.
In
the middle of it is the crypt he's going to be buried in. I got to let you know that Russ is 83 years old. Goes to work every day at 7 o'clock and works until 1. Every day. And I met him and I thought, you can't possibly be 83. He said, yeah, I am. I'm 83. But he said, I'll work you. I'll think you. I'll run you. I'm built for speed and for longevity. But in that park he built, he has a mausoleum. a one-crypt mausoleum, a two-crypt for he and his wife. And inside are lights and music. So he's going to, he said, I just got to have my, my music. Even if I am laying at rest, I want to have my music. So he's a character. But he's a, he, you know, character, the word character and entrepreneur go hand in hand.
Yeah, he's done a lot for the area, Larkin, and a great guy. We've done some events together when I tied with the Buffalo Erie Naval Park. We had Ricky Lee on the ship singing and everything, and Russell was there. And, again, with the vets, we all tie in really well. So great community, great people. You just, you got to find them. You got to look, and there's great people around trying to make a difference on their own.
Rich? Rich?
Man, I gotta get to Buffalo.
It sounds like we got to get to Buffalo.
Mark, bottom line is I got to get to Buffalo, guys. And I actually have a supplier who's in that area as well. So I'm becoming more and more, because of Mark and companies I'm doing business with, I'm becoming more and more familiar with the area. As I'm listening to all this, something came into my head, Mark, that it was one of the best moments of the American-made movie you were in. When you're asked, I think I'm getting this right, when you're asked, do you think about failure? And you said, failure is not an option. I think that's what you said, if I recall that correctly.
Yes, yeah, at the end of the movie.
You said that, failure is not an option. And it's a mindset. I mean, owning a business is it's wonderful, it's enriching, fulfilling. It's the most, maybe next to having kids, right, which I don't know anything about that, but it's one of the most stressful things you can ever do. It's sleepless nights. It's doubt. But what keeps you going? I mean, Mark, you know, you sum it up. Mark's got a lot of good summations about business. You know, there's that. There's you got to work 100 hours a week. Business owners work 100 hours a week, so don't need to work 40 hours a week. And I still say, Mark, in that, in meetings, if someone doesn't understand what that really means upon hearing it at first, that person isn't ready yet to own a business.
Yeah, good. First, great comment.
Person might become ready eventually, but the person doesn't understand yet what it doesn't mean that it's not ready to own a business yet.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that I learned through today's broadcast is how important networking is, and how much I'm listening to what you're saying. If only our national leaders could get out into the communities and talk with the people and see what's really going on in the country, maybe we would have a lot better, synopsis of what's happening. To see all of our jobs and the buildings closed and things like that over the years, that can't go on. As I said earlier, people don't want the generalities anymore. I saw a political ad this morning. I was kind of shocked, where it talked about we need jobs in America, we need our skills back, we need this and that. And I thought, I looked then who was sponsoring the ad, and I said, well, you're a perfect example. You should have been doing that for the last 25 years. Why haven't you? Yeah. You've been doing it, Mark. I mean, Larkin, you've been helping. Rich, you've seen it from your own startup. You've seen the struggles, the heartbreak. I don't think these national leaders go out to the communities to see what's going on. And that's why, you know, there's a lot of looking for change in the political landscape this year.
You know, Mike, I just want to mention, like Larkin, when, you know, we met and he's seen me and he's seen my mugshot. And, you know, he wants to meet my wife. He wants to see my children, the four. He wants to see the family. Then you get it. You get everything that, like Rich, you talked about, an entrepreneur. The risk is building a $500,000 new store and not having a dollar for it yet, you know, and hoping that everything comes out right. But we keep rolling because we don't have a choice. You know, I got 67 livelihoods I'm responsible for. But I think you have to have, you can't take your eye off your country. You can't take your eye off your family. You can't take your eye off your responsibility as a leader to provide for your families. This is all part of when Larkin came up and Bill Ritter, we're kind of all a family. From this radio show, Mike, that you run, and thank God you called me the one day and you called Rich and Larkin. We're all part of it. And Henry, we're all part of a family. We're all friends. If we come out with anything, we got a friendship, right?
And, absolutely.
Larkin made a call for me. They didn't have to. You know, that everything helps. So it's all, that's the beauty of it, really, when you see it working together and you get positive instead of on a negative train. You can make a difference.
Well, I think that the hardships that a lot of the Americans endured in recent years are starting to take, you know, effect on them, and they don't want it anymore. They want to see something done. And that's really good. I'm seeing it through this election process. I don't like to bring up the election that often, but I am seeing people talk to me that I never imagined would be involved in the election. Never. They couldn't care 10 years ago, but now they're saying, no, I'm going out. I already have in my mind what I want to see happen, and I don't care what anybody says. I already have my mind made up. And that's good, because we need a rebirth in America. We need to get that whole idea of getting buildings filled with manufacturing, make our own clothes. How can anybody walk around and feel good wearing all foreign-made stuff?
Mike, I'd like to throw something out on the table for all of us right now. I think a question, and Henry, you might have sent it out, or, you know, and a lot of questions I'm hearing people say, and they think of the system's rigged, this, superdelegates. Why vote?
Yeah, well, that's true. Henry said that to me the other day. Why vote? You know, it's just like when people say, oh, it's...
What should we tell people? Why vote?
You know, Rich, Larkin, and Mark, tell me when people keep arguing with me that we live in a free market economy. Exactly what does that mean to you? Does that mean that we should allow people to just move out of the country and leave our people flat? I said to one guy a couple of weeks ago, I said, well, you can't uproot a business, an entire industry building, but you can certainly take what's in that building and move it elsewhere, which has happened in the last 25 years. There's no heart and soul left in Washington for the people. I haven't had a good feeling from Washington in a long, long time. What's the solution, guys?
Hey, Larkin, do you think Washington has the people I do on my team?
No. No, and that's the sad part. Everybody's in it for themselves. And
there you
and,
go.
And Michael, you strike a vein there. The current people running for president couldn't possibly be more disengaged and more remote from the reality of this country than, I mean, I can't imagine, other than if we would have let them hibernate for 7 years so they never saw or read anything. But they are so out of touch, it's not funny. It just isn't funny. And I don't know what you have to have in your ego to make you want to run to be the president. It's the most powerful person in the world, highest job in the world, highest job in this land. But what makes somebody want to take on that responsibility?
Love of country?
Used to be. I mean, it used to be, but I don't know anymore. I just think, you know, I told you last week I saw the bumper sticker, re-elect no one. Throw them all out. Throw the bums out, and let's go back to a gentleman and gentle lady.
You get my father's vote.
Yep. Gentleman and gentle lady, Congress and Senate that don't. That are representatives of the community, the people that have lived life in this country, that have met payrolls and that have gotten up and arrived at a 9-to-5 job and been there faithfully.
Well, you know, you're right. But as a result of the poor leadership that we've been watching for years and years, it's really affected an entire generation of American people. It's affected them in a very negative way. Even when you go to the store now, there's no personal touch. They even have the change machine. You give them the dollar or the $5, and the change shoots out of the machine. And God forbid if you have a dollar bill coming to you, it's given to you almost begrudgingly.
Right.
How do you change this attitude? You have to do this from the ground up. You have to do it in the homes. People have to stop watching the televisions and start going out and socializing again.
You know, Mike, the funny thing, Larkin just met three people this week, and you may know or not know that we're all born in the 30s, and all make a difference and are all instrumental in my life. And that's my father, 80, and Frank Sorrentino made change for me, 83. And who's the other one, Larkin, you just met? Trying to think, another 80 years old. My father, Frank, And I think there's one other gentleman skips my mind right now, but these people are a different generation is the point. I mean, they're just different generation. They get it. They've been through the tough times and how America was built. They kind of understand where we're going and what we need to do.
And they really want to help people. They wanted to bring their family up.
Oh, I'm sorry. It was Mr. Salvatore. My
yeah.
father, Frank Sorrentino, and Mr. Salvatore, Russ Salvatore. All 80 years old, Lark, and you just met this week, that are great men in their 80s still making difference, right?
So,
yep.
So Mark's father, he said, I had a mission when I was raising my children. None of my children was going to go unclothed or unfed. And he said, I stepped back and looked at that, and I thought, well, that's nice. But what about the rest of the neighborhood? And he used to put a grill out there and cook and feed kids that otherwise wouldn't get a square meal. Who does that?
And you had to help him. You had to do something. But he always fed you, Lark, and you always gained weight with my father.
Wow, this guy, we have to have an hour with Mark's dad. Oh, man, he is sounds like an unbelievable. He's in that commercial on the front page. He's the guy at the cash register. If you go to American Workers Radio, there's like a minute clip of Mark's store there. Check it out when you can.
But remember, Mike, he grew up dirt poor, and he's not afraid. You know, my mother was an orphan, put on a bus at 5, and he signed her out. And he kicked coal off the rail cars and had the ice, had the dirty bath. He was the last one in his family to have that bath out of 11. And he tried to put water, and I think he told you that story, Larkin, and his father slapped him upside the head, I think. Tried to waste some clean water. After 11 children bathed in the same tub, right?
Yeah.
That's just how it was, right?
It's just amazing. And we've gotten pretty soft. I would say that the current up-and-coming generation, and unfortunately three of my kids are in it, is about as soft as it gets.
Yeah, but you know what? As a result of what happened, there's an opportunity for us to turn things around. From my little travels to different stores and to different events, I see that a lot more of the American people are asking questions. And now they don't only ask the questions, but they're expecting an answer to see what's going on and what the storekeeper thinks and what the politician thinks. And as a result of all those questions, more discussions are coming about from business owners, elected officials, the general public, and also the store merchandisers. Mark, if a man came into your store and said, I have some products to sell you, well, you are naturally going to focus on what do you have that's American made. But that would be an opportunity for you to also ask, what other products do you have? How many countries do you represent? I'm representing America. The question I have for you is, what percentage of the products you're offering me for sale represent the country that you're trying to sell them in? And this is a very difficult thing that we're going through in this country. Everywhere you go, it's foreign made.
Yeah, I want to bring up something really positive. Last Friday, they asked me to be part of a career day at our another school that's called Alden Central School. It's probably 15 minutes from my shop. I've dealt with Iroquois Central School. That's closer. This Alden School. So I went with my welding manager. They set us up in the shop class. There was 40 businesses, big business. Moog, which is top 100 company of the world in my backyard. Moog was there, Graham Manufacturing, Danforth, a big company. So anyways, I set up a grill, and I had a movie there and handouts for the kids. So they bussed kids in from four areas, came in. This Alden Central School, the teacher there was an eight-year veteran of our armed forces, and he wanted to get back into teaching. So he cleaned out this wood shop, Mike, in this metal shop. He got the teachers, he got the program going. This school, which is a public school, has wood shop, metal shop, electronics like I used to have, even 3D printing and CAD like I grew up with in the school. The kids that came around, I would ask them, do you eat? And they all looked at me, where'd this guy come from? Yeah, I eat. I said, oh, then you'll need my grill, you know. But I talked to them, won a couple. I gave the movie. We had a panel board with GM, the head of GM on Moog. This was a nice panel board, all volunteer, and these kids ask us questions. I told them, one thing you got to do, show up on time, guys. You got to be 15 minutes early is on time because nobody is. You'll be the number one employee. You got to have a great interview, and you can't be that guy that says it's not my job. because that's what I've got a lot of. It's not my job. It's everybody's job. Your job is to get that customer happy for your company to stay in business. It was a great day. I'll tell you, 50% of the kids I seen that day I'd hire, they had two jobs in 9th grade, 10th grade. It was so refreshing to see. It gave me hope that this school is back on track. So it's one school of many. Most don't have the wood shops and metal shops in them anymore at all. But this school believed and got them back going again. And I seen farm work ethic. I seen some great things last Friday. So I just want to bring that up, Mike. Because
that's a very good point. And that's something that you should see all over the country, people being offered the various shops. Because they took them out. They said, they tell me, well, we took them out because we thought that those were going to be obsolete. Everything was going to be coming foreign, and all we'd be doing is sending out invoices and this and that. That's not the, what the real world is about. You have to make what you use and also share it with the world if you can.
Yeah, Mike, I accidentally used Rich's line in front of about 50 to 100 kids. I said, hey, anybody here at Harvard? I didn't go there. Rich, this was on a panel board of six people.
I love it, Mark.
I got all the teachers. I said, no, I believe in college. I had to kind of cover myself. I said, but who can read a tape measure here? Because if you went to Harvard and can't read a tape measure, I have a problem with that. You know, I was fired up that day. And it was very interesting. But a lot of people can't read a tape measure. And I talked to that teacher, and he had this scale on the wall that teaches you. He laughed because the head of GM, Moog, he said, that's the problem. The kids coming out, like Henry, you said, and we know these kids are smart. We're not saying the kids are dumb, but they don't have the common sense or hand skills they need. The head of GM said that's our number one problem. Moog, number one problem. They build a sandbox. They're encouraging them to bring a lawnmower in, build a go-kart. We get these smart kids, they don't know how to hold a screwdriver, what a Phillips is, what an Allen wrench is. So it's a major, major disconnect that somehow happened in this country.
But, you know, Mark, you're right, and there is a problem. If you're not offered something, then you won't know.
They're not exposed to it.
That's exactly right. This is where the problem is in America. We had at one time 30% of all of the students in America were offered some type of trade or industrial art class. Today it's around 5%. So we went, instead of going up, we went down.
And you,
well, referring to college thing, you know, I mean, you guys know Princeton. No, I didn't go there either. I once drove by it.
You would have been proud of me, Rich. I'm like, oh, boy. Rich Lowe just came out of me in front. That was my, like, opening statement. I'm like, I won't say that one again. But it was good. I liked it. I'm not a, you know.
Our youth, guys, our youth, in my opinion, yeah, what's youth? You know, I mean, call it up to college age. The intelligence and innovation levels are off the charts. Are off the charts, and we all know young people like this. So what I'm about to say is not meant as so much as a criticism of them, but more of an observation. Our youth is the dumbest group of smart people who've ever lived in America.
You're right.
No, they are. They're the dumbest group of smart people, and the reason that they are is not because they lack the intelligence. It's because, and here comes the politically incorrect answer, it's because they have been failed by liberal progressive ideology. Plain and simple.
And they haven't been taught common sense.
Does it mean, Michael, does it mean that the other side of that, whatever the exact other side of it, does it mean it's perfect? Does it mean it's always right? No. No. But like we had the minimum wage discussion, I challenge our listeners, find me a city that identifies itself as progressive that isn't either incredibly expensive and affluent or depressed and downtrodden. Chicago, Baltimore, Detroit, Flint, New York, Boston, San Francisco, Seattle. What are the common traits of all those cities? Amazingly expensive or amazingly depressed and downtrodden. And when the twain shall meet, guess what happens? All the people who worship at the altar of diversity, they fight tooth and nail to keep out those whom they claim. Michael, Mark's father, a guy who came, right, Mark, a guy who did not come from means. And yet his inclination was to be generous. Yet he knew that you know, he gave to say he gave some things to those who are lesser. Greed, of course, Michael, is not a good thing. But I again would ask anybody listening in the show, find me an economic system where greed doesn't exist. Find me one. Communism, the greediest of it all. How about that? All of these isms, any ism you want to throw at me, Larkin. Socialism, communism, fascism. How about this one? How about Sharia law theocracy? Well, that's a bastion of individual liberty, if I ever saw one. Free market, Michael. Even with all the crap that we talk about and all the stuff that we see going on, the fact is America's awesome economic history, even with all these things, has enabled people who come to this country to have, on average, more opportunity and a better chance to make a living than anywhere else.
Absolutely.
This is a fact. And we and think about how remarkable this next fact is. We have been a nation for 240 years. And I'm not saying that we always get it right because we don't. No one is perfect. But after 240 years, you guys realize that's a blip. That's a blip in the history of the world. And yet we've done it better and more consistent than places that have been around for thousands of years. And you know where the people who live in those societies, Michael, for thousands of years are doing? They're trying to get the hell out.
That's right. Now, you know what? I want to say this to you, Rich, and I'm going to ask you for a question and ask Mark and Larkin the same question. Could you imagine how unbelievable it would be in America if our people paid attention to jobs, job skills, making sure that our industries were up to snuff, our leaders paid attention to America first? We are the greatest nation on earth. Can you imagine if we spent the last 30 years continuing what we had 50 or 40 years ago? Tell me what you think. I mean, we're bringing people here to help them get a job, yet our own people don't have the jobs. And could you imagine if we had the jobs, how much better we would be?
Yeah, Mike, you know, we make buying American easy. That's what the Made in America store does, right? We make buying American easy. But we need to make manufacturing easier in our country. So you got to keep people busy, right? We talk, if we keep people busy, if they've got jobs so they can make their own livelihood instead of being on the streets or whatnot, they can provide for themselves. That's what we lack, that middle class shrinkage. I heard the other day Barry Sanders say, you know, we're going to mandate $15 minimum wage, and I have no trouble with people getting paid good. But to me right now, if we went to $15 minimum wage in New York, I go from $9 to $15. 20 people will cost me $4,800 a week times 12 months. We're going to be $57,000 a year. They just put the Made in America stores out of business. Thank you.
You know, one of the things I don't understand is if Bernie Sanders and Hillary and everybody else should be addressing one issue. What are we going to do to get 45 million Americans full and part-time jobs right now?
So they can provide.
Right. So they're off the government-mandated programs and unemployment and welfare and everything else. Get them back into work. Larkin, do you agree with that? I mean, let's 45 million people. No one is addressing that. They're talking about, oh, we need jobs and all. What type of jobs are they talking about and what number of jobs? We need 45 million jobs as we speak right now.
So, Michael, you're 100% right. And, you know, the issue is building sustainable small businesses in this country that can employ. I mean, we do have small businesses that are underemploying right now, and we have big businesses that are, you know, closing up or cutting back. It didn't happen until 1991. But, you know, in this country, we never used our employees to cut expenses. We didn't do it in the 60s. We didn't do it in the 70s. We didn't do it in the 80s. We certainly didn't do it in the
90s. And you are absolutely right, Larkin. And the biggest change that happened over the last 30 years is this. When people had jobs, they were out in spending money. Now that they are collecting on some government program or unemployment, they don't have discretionary money. They lived as individuals. Now they're living in the sidelines with no job. This is the point. If Sanders got up there, Hillary got up there, and Trump and Cruz and Kasich got up there and said, we are going to bring the 45 million jobs to everybody's attention until we start to make results happen. But I don't hear that. I hear a lot of generalities. We need jobs. We need this. We need everything for free. Where's the money going to come to pay for even one thing, let alone 10 things?
And, Mike, one thing I'm on right now, and Larkin is a believer with me, is a store-in-store concept. So what we've done over 6 years is gathered 7,000 products made by our 500 remaining American manufacturers, nothing that plugs in, of course. We support our 8 stores, but now we're taking it to another level, and me and Larkin talked about it a little bit, and he agrees it's the ticket. We made Buying American easy, but we made wholesaling Buying Made in America. Nobody took the time to ever vet these products. So we're going into 100 stores, which we'll be announcing pretty soon, with an 11-foot section of Made in America 100% products. And that's how you grow this mission and movement. So anybody that's listening, the listeners, whoever tells you they can't find Made in America products, we've got a distribution house that can provide them now. And it's just a great way to grow our movement. I'm very excited about it. I think Larkin agrees with me. It's where our bus should be going, and to really grow our mission and movement and help us sustain our jobs.
You know, you're right. And one of the biggest things that I see is there's no one on the political trail or no one in the big media saying, let's talk about renegotiating all of our trade deals. Well, we don't use the word negotiating. Let's call them updating. Something that was put in effect 30 years ago, I think needs to be tweaked a little bit so it starts to benefit the American people a little more. That's the kind of thing we have to get the next president of the United States. I mean, all that's been going on in the last few months is unbelievable. And Mark, don't you have an election coming up this Tuesday in New York?
Coming up strong, yeah. So they're all coming to town to give us some lip service and hopefully make a difference. New York's a big area for them all.
Well, you know what, Mark? Maybe you can get them over there in the next couple of days, send out the invitation to get them over.
A lot of rumors. People started around town here, and I said, we're for America. But it's good. You're right, though. What a better place, the Made in America store and movement, and for people to voice their opinion. But no, there's a lot happening. New York's a big area. It goes back to, can you win New York? I'm curious to see how this one comes out.
The biggest thing that everybody tells me about, they love the idea of a 50-50 balance. There's no controversy in that. When they go into a store, Mark, you just said you don't have even one thing that plugs in. How is it possible?
Crazy.
Every person looking at a television today, looking at their phone, at the computer, none of it's made in America. How is that possible? How did we allow it to get to that point? And by the way, which candidate is saying we're going to bring back 50% of the manufacturing of the computers back to the USA? That's the candidate I'll vote for. Who is going to say, I'm going to bring security back for the American people to have a job, raise their family, feel secure about themselves again? Who is that person?
I think that's the next level of our movement. And I think we need to concentrate on that and understand that. Bringing back jobs to America is lip service. And I hear that from candidates left and right. We got to get jobs back. What happens is that they come up with some bird brain idea that has no sustainability, and we're right back in the same position in 3 years. We've got to build sustainability, and that's a supply chain. We've got to have a program that says we're not going to be at 50% next year. It's going to take us probably twice as long to build that sustainable manufacturing base in this country than it did for us to tear it down, which was 5 years.
A 30-year mistake, right, Larkin?
Yeah, but also when people – I just heard it this morning in the news media again, which really drives me nuts – with hundreds of billions of dollars spent every day in America and every year in America on education, the news media continues to say we don't have enough young graduates getting out of school ready to go to America's workforce. How is that possible? I don't understand it. And no one on the national level, no one on the state level is really saying, well, we're going to take A, B, and C step to make a big change come about. Nobody.
Well, it's the country, unfortunately, has become bogged down with partisan politics. And the Republicans don't want to do anything that the Democrats suggest, and the Democrats don't want to do anything that the Republicans suggest. And that good old two cigars and six cold beers sitting on the White House porch that, that Reagan and Tip O'Neill used to do worked back then. It wouldn't work now. Our current president wouldn't sit down with the Republicans and say, okay, here's where we want to be. We all agree this is where we need to get to. So how do we get here? What is it that we need to do? And I know that as Democrats, we have to give up that. As Republicans, you have to give up that. But, you know, we can develop a collaborative effort that's going to allow us to rebuild the supply chain in this country.
And that's right. And Mark is showing a very good path to a supply chain. If there were more Marks, one in every city and every state, it would already start this whole thing moving again. But what happens is a lot of people are afraid to go into any kind of business these days. They're simply afraid. And they're afraid because they see unemployment. They see people without the ability to go out and have discretionary funds. You talked about several of the people who you visited with the other day. Every one of those people had their chance in life to focus on what they were doing, save some money, and now they're happy and healthy as part of what they're doing. That hasn't happened for many, many, many America's young people who
are
out.
Again, you have to understand that, if you gave me $12 million to build a factory that made something that plugged in for Mark Stores, I couldn't do it. Because, you know, assembling a toaster or a dishwasher or a refrigerator is one thing, but getting the component parts that go putting it together, they're just not manufactured in this country.
But at least Mark and Larkin and Rich, as we get to the end, we could at least focus on that 50-50 balance. We put our people to work making things, assembling things. Everybody gets a slice of the pie. Right now, people in other countries are getting the whole pie, and we're getting the crumbs, and we're getting the products to buy here. And sooner than later, we're not going to have any money to buy
Mike,
the stuff.
We let Rich drink a lot of coffee. We better let him talk there. Rich, you still good?
I'm loving it. I'm loving it.
I have to tell you, it's time for closing remarks.
I wanted to just say, you know, our audio engineer, Henry Chaplinsky, has been asking a question lately that we need to continue to pick up, and he's asking, why even bother? Why bother voting? And I just need to tell our audience, Henry is not, if I may speak for him for a moment, he is not an apathetic, indifferent person whatsoever, but he's asking this question. You know what, guys? Unfortunately, sometimes it's been a little tough to answer that question the last many, many years.
Yep.
Henry is a liberal / progressive conservative.
Mark, your closing remarks.
Well, I'd like to answer the question. What I think for Henry is, there's so many people that died for that right to vote. That's my answer to people. A lot of blood's been shed for that.
Well said.
You're right. And I'd like to send Larkin some cookies are coming Larkin's way for my wife, but I'm going to have to send the whole radio crew the cookies, Larkin.
We're waiting.
Yeah.
Well, guys, I want to thank you for all of your efforts again this week to keep our people together. Everyone tells me they enjoy our broadcast because it sounds like a couple of people sitting around a table at a restaurant or in the house talking about common sense issues. Thanks for tuning in. I will acknowledge all of our advertisers throughout the week. And, of course, we have a broadcast at 11 on Saturday, and I will make sure that all of our advertisers are acknowledged. Until this Saturday at 11 or next Wednesday at 11, I wish you and yours the very best. Have a great one.
Take care, guys. Have a good week.